on the phone with me right now is Jason Devine. Jason Devine is an anti-racist action organizer living in Calgary. Black Mask interviewed Jason a couple of months ago to speak with him about the violent home invasion that was committed against him and his family by Calgary Nazis. Today we have him on the line to talk about the current state of anti-racist organizing in Calgary and the recent success of the Calgary ARA in their squashing of a Nazi rally in the city's downtown on March 19th. Hi, Jason. Thanks for being on Black Mask.
Thank you for having me on here.
Great. Can you tell our listeners about March 19th or March 21st, sometimes as it is in Calgary, and mm-hmm. why it's a big deal?
Certainly. So March 21st is the UN's designated day for the elimination of racial discrimination. It's the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. And that the date was set off to commemorate an event, a tragic event that happened in South Africa, when people who were protesting against the apartheid system were shot at, and a few people died as a result of police shooting at the demonstrators. So neo-Nazis in different places have called for, at times, trying to hold a white pride worldwide rally. Neo-Nazis here in the city, specifically around the group Aryan Guard, now known as Blood and Honor, took the initiative there and for a couple years in a row had organized rallies on that date, on March 21st, back in 2008 and in 2009. So we had decided in ARA that that, of course, is a big insult to anyone who loves equality and is against racism, and more importantly, that we have to organize and stop them, because, of course, we realized that if the neo-Nazis were able to hold that march unopposed, not only would it give everyone in the city a bad name for not doing anything about it, but even more importantly, it would empower them and likely empower the whole movement, the neo-Nazi movement here in North America. So our goal was and has been to organize against them on that day. Now, because of turmoil in the organization and our continuing activism, they were unable to hold a march in 2010, which was it was an awesome event that way. But we decided then that we also want to turn this into a tradition. And so, you know, we've said and continue to say that, you know, someday, when the neo-Nazi movement doesn't exist any longer in the city, we want to continue to rally on that day, to create it as a tradition to commemorate that day and to celebrate our diversity and to continue the fight against racism and other forms of discrimination.
So you said that back in 2010, the march didn't happen. I'm assuming that was because of there were a bunch of internal splits within the bonehead scene in Calgary.
Yes.
At that time?
That's right, because there had been a bomb attack against one group. Specifically, somebody in the group Aryan Guard had put a pipe bomb at the doorstep of someone in their split-off group, WEB, Western European Brotherhood or Bloodlines. And that led to the leader of Aryan Guard at the time, Kyle McKee, being charged. He was on the run for a while and ended up getting arrested. The attempted murder charges were dropped, but he did plead guilty to having materials to construct a bomb and in constructing a bomb. So he was in jail at that time, and because of that inner turmoil, they were unable to carry out the march. And they even went so far as to claim that they had disbanded. So we saw that as a victory for everyone, certainly.
Do you want to describe the scene for us on March 19th?
Certainly. So, of course, March 21st this year, unfortunately, fell on a Monday, which, of course, you know, a regular weekday is not a prime day for holding any type of rally. So our plans were to hold the rally on either the 19th or the 20th. Then we got wind that Blood and Honor, which is the group used to be known as Aryan Guard, was planning on holding a rally on March 19th, so we did go ahead. We organized against that. They came out. Now, we had clashes with them, and wouldn't have been able to directly stop them. In 2008, there weren't enough people. We weren't organized enough to prevent them from reaching City Hall, but of course, they didn't march freely. And then in 2009, we prevented them from reaching City Hall, and so our idea this year was to make sure, once again, they did not. The police came out in full force, riot gear, had blocked us off. We were kept about a block away. Their claim was to stop, you know, prevent any violence from occurring. You know, we realized, of course, that if we had not had the rally, then the police would have let them march. So by holding down the area, staying around City Hall, the police wouldn't let them pass. And the neo-Nazis eventually gave up, got on a city bus, and left. Now, thankfully, there was only 12 people who came out, And I believe one of the reasons, some of the reasons are, of course, because you may have heard of the little bit of a Nazi rampage in Edmonton, where four members of Blood and Honor there had gone on a rampage on White Avenue, just attacking people left, right, and center, after publicizing and handing out leaflets for that rally. So, I mean, some members there and some members in other areas were in jail, and most importantly, the leader of Blood and Honor, Kyle McKee, was in jail after pleading guilty to assaulting a girl and to threatening me and making references to the home invasion. So our belief is that because of these incarcerations, because of people getting demoralized, that was the reason there was only 12 of them that actually showed up, and they completely failed.
And okay, so you mentioned that the police had set up a line, and
yeah,
that your feeling is if you hadn't have been if ARA hadn't have organized the counter demo, the Nazis would have just been freely allowed to march. And we've heard reports here that the police also provided transportation to Blood and Honor. Is this correct?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. My partner, my wife, fellow ARA member, Bonnie, got interviewed a couple days ago by the Herald, and she spoke with a reporter. And the reporter, in fact, told her that the transit, Calgary Transit, was actually used. The police set it up. Apparently, the neo-Nazis had gone through a private company to get the bus, and as soon as the company found out who, in fact, they were like, no deal, you're not using our buses, and no way we're going to let you do that. So then they approached the police, and the police said, yeah, we'll set up a transit for you. And, you know, Bonnie rightfully said, you know, this is just more evidence of City Hall, and more specifically the police, basically giving the neo-Nazis a free ride, because the fact is that transit paid for that. Public funds paid for that. The neo-Nazis in no way were forced to pay to use those rides.
I'm wondering if you can also maybe, because we don't, in Winnipeg right now, there doesn't appear to be an organized white power movement in the same way that there is in Calgary. And I'm wondering if you can give listeners here maybe a bit of a background or a picture of what the organization looks like, and some of the tactics they used. I know that there's been a move away from Nazi groups using the term neo-Nazi,
mm-hmm.
and you hear words like white nationalism, and you don't hear words like racist. You hear words like racialist,
mm-hmm.
and there's oftentimes calls to white pride,
yeah.
Which they argue is different from white supremacy. And also, it appears to me, just in looking at a lot of the material that these groups publish, that there's also a sort of an attempt to co-opt certain leftist language, specifically in terms of trying to appeal to the working class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if you can sort of comment on that and give us a bit of a picture of what the veneer is and what's underneath the veneer.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, I think that we can kind of... see the neo-Nazi movement to some extent, and I would say anyone who's affiliated with this are neo-Nazis, regardless of what group or what they are. But I think there's a spectrum between what you might call the attempts at appearing respectable, trying to look mainstream, and I'd say the best representative of that would be Paul Fromm, you know, someone who goes around in a suit, tries to act like he's an intellectual, a journalist, and exactly uses the same rhetoric you talked about. You know, he doesn't say, kick all these, you know, dirty whatever, subhumans, you know, it doesn't use that rhetoric. He used the rhetoric of immigration reform. We want to reform immigration. And then the other side of the spectrum, you know, you have your out-and-out hooliganism, you know, the people who make no bones about who they are and where they're at. I think that despite their attempts to put on this more, you know, we're talking about civil rights and free speech and, you know, cultural pride, I think the fact is that these people can't help themselves. And it constantly bursts forth who they really are and where they're really at. Because, I mean, numerous times when they've had their marches, they've said to the people, you know, okay, don't scream, don't swear, don't bring swastikas, you know, don't act like a national socialist, act like the more respectable, you know, immigration reform, you know, white nationalists, white whatever. But the fact is, when you see these people march, they can't control themselves, and sooner or later, you know, the truth, their true colors come forth. You know, some of them can't help it, and they start zig-heiling, right? So
yeah,
they end up just undercutting their own attempts. But I think the fact of the matter is, it's still important to make those that critique and to show that discrepancy, because we, of course, can say, well, they're lying, it's not true, whatever. But the fact is the state will constantly say, and the police have made the excuse, well, they have the rights to free speech, and we need to respect those rights. We need to make sure that they have the ability to express that. And our position, of course, has been, they're not a civil society group. They're not a cultural association. They're a violent gang, you know, and this idea that they're just a bunch of like-minded individuals with common concerns, that's not what it's about. Their program is not about expressing pride. It's about terror and violence.
And I guess on that note, I'm wondering, we interviewed you a couple of months back about the invasion on your home and the and the attack on you and your family and fellow ARA member. And I'm wondering if you can if we can just follow up on that, and you can give us a bit of background on what's happened since then.
Certainly, certainly. So I mean, of course, the part of the aftermath is dealing with the physical and psychological recovery. The fact of the matter is, you know, we believe that it is members of Blood and Honor who are behind the attack. I do believe that Kamaki was personally involved in the attack. I do believe he was the one who was hammering me in the head trying to kill me. And, I mean, the thing that's really unfortunate for us is the fact that Kyle and his girlfriend, Natalie Serafini, many members of Blood and Honor, actually only live 4 to 5 blocks away from our house. So it's rough at times. Security is the number one concern. We've had to have our windows reinforced. We got a new door, got a security system. You know, we have things to defend ourselves as much as possible. And we've had to talk with the children, you know, kind of analyzing and doing drills. You know, what do we do if the house is invaded again? What if we're shot at or bombed, or what to do on the way to school? So, you know, it's a little rough that way, but we, you know, we're not trying to let ourselves fall into paranoia or allow ourselves to be overly inhibited with the fear. Because the fact is that those attacks are still ever-present. I mean, Kyle McKee has been in jail for over a month, because about a month ago we were out not too far away from our house putting up posters on 17th Ave Southeast, one of our main streets, and he and another member of the group drove by us. They were wearing black flight jackets, black ski masks, and Kyle was tapping his bat outside, you know, on the side of his door. And he was like, you know, hey, Jason, what's going on? He had said, you know, do you want to say hello? Do you want to say good night? And then he'd said, do you need another visit? Do you need another visit at your house? I mean, thankfully, he was arrested and held in jail, but, you know, he's going to get out sooner or later. So, you know, our focus has been, you know, let's make sure the house is safe. Let's make sure the family's safe. But possibly more importantly, let's continue the activism. Let's continue the organizing, because, you know, the best defense is an offense. So, you know, my friend's recovering. We're all recovering. It's just a matter of, it's rough because, you know, as you know, the neo-Nazi movement has its ups and downs, like any organization. They just seem to be so tenacious, and we still have two organizations existing here in Calgary, and a third one has just recently moved in, Volksfront from BC. So, yeah, it's an ongoing struggle out here.
And is there a sense that those three organizations are working together?
I mean, after the split between the Aryan Guard and the Web, you know, that of course made us happy. Any splits in the neo-Nazi movement, I think, is a cause for joy. But they actually had marched together in 2009, so we were like, well, obviously they're trying to patch things together. Then, of course, there was the bomb attempt. We recently found out that there were threats back and forth, that they were going to kill each other's members. As far as we know right now, they're not really on speaking terms. It's a bit back and forth. That's good. Volksfront, from what we can tell, is not on good terms with them. And apparently one of the reasons they moved in here is explicitly to, I guess, capture the territory they see for organizing. So, I mean, in that sense, it's good. But, of course, it's hard to say what the future holds. I mean, some of the people in these groups realize that it's all in their interest to actually work together and not stay divided. So we have to continue to organize around them and try to exploit the differences between them and keep them separated.
Just in terms of just going back to the idea of the sort of face that they try and put forward and what bursts out,
mm-hmm.
How much above ground activity are they engaging in, and how much of it is underground? Do you have any sense?
Well, I mean, what was surprising for us, at least, was with this last rally, because the fact is Blood and Honor, traditionally, like a lot of neo-Nazi groups, basically organize over the Internet alone. But for this rally, you know, they actually were putting up posters all over our neighborhood, which, of course, as I said, we share. So, I mean, they're actually going so far as putting up posters, handing out leaflets. The members who were caught and arrested for the assaults in Edmonton were also handing out. So for that, for us, that was, you know, that was a little depressing to see them kick that activism that much further, other than just, you know, typing on a blog, actually going out, talking to people. And, of course, you know, they're holding their rallies. One of the other leading members of Blood and Honor, Kyle McKee's girlfriend, Ellie Serafini, has said recently, like, we plan to have more marches in the future. So this is one of the groups that tries to get more public. As for Volksfront, they're not very big on publicity. They don't hold public meetings. Everything they do is private. So on the one hand, while that's kind of good that they're not, you know, going out public in your face, it's also harder to get information on them because they're very security conscious. So, you know, it kind of differs, right? I mean, some people are more politically orientated. But the fact is somebody, or a group like Blood and Honor, while they may have a bit of, you know, above-ground activism, the bulk of their stuff is still, and I'd say for most of these groups, if they have any activism, it's quiet, it's not seen, and a lot of it just revolves around violence.
You had mentioned that there had been an attack in Edmonton involving four Nazis who were postering for the their own march in that city. Did a march happen there at all?
Oh, no. They were actually organizing for the March 19th event here in Calgary.
Oh, they were organizing, they were postering in Edmonton for Calgary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, I mean, one of them I know at least actually used to be down here and was a part of the organization. But, I mean, they've been trying to branch out from Calgary. I mean, a lot of neo-Nazis across North America, and especially across Canada, see Calgary as, you know, this kind of this beachhead, right? Like, this, we have a toehold. Let's keep it. Let's pour in as much resources as possible to keep it going. And because of that, they're also trying to branch out from Calgary. So right now, it's a bit of a hot center for it, unfortunately.
Is there any sense of how this all started? Like, how they got this toehold, or why Calgary has become?
Of course, as you know, I mean, Canada has a colonial imperialist history. You know, we still suffer from racist policies, from racist atmospheres. Racism does exist in Canada. So, I mean, the context is there nationally. And, of course, Alberta, you know, does have, in its history, racism, of course, you know, the treatment of the natives. More specifically, we had the Ku Klux Klan organizing in the late 20s and 30s, Aryan Nations in the 80s and 90s. So that history is there. But I think it'd be incorrect to see it as strictly just, you know, an internal movement. The fact of the matter is Kyle McKee himself, many of the members of Blood and Honor / Aryan Guard and people who are in Webb who are formerly in it, a lot of these people actually aren't even from Alberta. They're from out east. So I think what has happened is that, first and foremost, we had the group Western Canada for Us back in 2004, 2005. He was active here in Alberta, and its membership stretched between Edmonton and Calgary. That fell apart, and then remnants from that organization teamed up with many of these neo-Nazis coming from out east to form Aryan Guard. But I think, like I said, going back, is just that, you know, I think at the time, I think they saw, you know, they bought into this conservative stereotype where, you know, everyone in Alberta is this redneck, conservative, wild capitalism perspective, which, of course, if you live here, if you look at the voting totals, if you look at what's going on the street level, that's not exactly a right picture. But I think they bought into that. And also at the time, back in 2005, 2006, the economy was doing better, at least with regards to jobs. So there was an economic basis for them to move out here. Consequently, though, since they've set up, like I said, they've done as much as possible to keep their toehold here. They've gone to the point where they even had a white relocation program where they were saying to anybody who described themselves as neo-Nazi, white nationalists, come to Calgary, we'll help you get started, we'll pay your rent, we'll help you get a job. And the fact is, we know most of these people do either go to school or work for a living. So undoubtedly, they're getting funding from groups in the States and in Canada.
Well, I'm sure glad that you guys are doing the work that you're doing there, then, in light of all this. It's super important. Is there anything else you want to add about what's sort of happening at the street level?
I think the thing is that while sections of the police may start taking it more seriously, or maybe sections of, you know, city council. I think the fact of the matter is they only see it insofar as it makes them look bad. And I think that if they've been pressured to do anything, it's because of our continued activism putting the fire under them. But I think we have to remember, you know, as ARA's 4 points of unity state, we don't rely on them to do our job for us, and we can't. I mean, this is a community issue, and we have to continue organizing, and that's going to be, in the long run, the only real thing that's going to help improve the situation here in Calgary is by continuing to organize on the broadest basis. And you know, just finally, I'd like to say that this can happen anywhere, you know, and we have to keep our eyes open and, you know, go for maximum solidarity.
Well, on that note, I think we'll leave it at that. Thanks very much for talking with us, Jason.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me on very much.
Yeah, keep up the good work. Solidarity forever.
Awesome. Thank you.